Welcome to the Greg Hughes podcast. This is the on-demand add-on to the Daily Show on Highland Radio, where we step away from the clock. No news breaks, no ad breaks, just the time and space needed to really get into the stories that matter from across Donegal and beyond. Today we're joined by Jim McLaughlin. Jim's story is one of incredible endurance and a total transformation of life. 40 years ago, as a 22-year-old, Jim was checked into St. Connell's Hospital by his mother, a desperate move that became the first day of a four-decade journey in sobriety. We're going to talk to Jim about those early days in Donegal, the reality of addiction in the 1980s Ireland, and what it takes to maintain that resolve for 40 years. Jim McLaughlin, thanks so much for joining us for a chat. And we're talking about really a fantastic milestone for you that's coming up here. But as a start-off point, do you describe yourself as an alcoholic still, Jim?
Oh, 100%, hey. Proud of it. I'm kind of a saying, hey, you have to wear the badge, hey. I'm an alcoholic now. Before I even got to sobriety, I was an alcoholic. And I've been an alcoholic now for 40 years, and I've been an alcoholic today. And I'm actually proud of it.
We'll get into that a little bit later on, but I mean, take us back to the beginning. What was life like for you growing up as a young lad, Jim?
Well, life was great. Hey, I'm from a big family. Hey, great parents. Hey, I was a young man out 5 or 6 nights a week, drinking heavy. Couldn't see the damage I was doing, but hey, got home every night safe and had some great friends. And made sure I got home safe, but the fast train I was on. The fast train I would have called life soon came off the tracks, and I got help, hey, and it worked, and I'm still here to prove that, you know.
Do you think you kind of have an addictive personality? Like, when you were out drinking, were you different to your mates? Like, would they go home and you'd still be out, or did you have less tolerance for drink? Like, what was your drinking like as a young lad?
I was pretty heavy, hey, to be honest. Hey, I was no different to any of my friends. Hey, I had some great friends, but I always wanted more. And I went out pretty often. And I was young, like I was 22 and went off. I didn't really see the harm I was doing, but very thankful. Hey, I have a good mother, hey. And my mother got me sorted, and thankfully my mother's still alive, hey. Which is great too, Nick.
It's fantastic that she got to see these fantastic milestones. But when your mother, what was it about your drinking that was concerning her at that time, do you think?
Well, I was still living at home, hey, and she'd myself and 6 other children younger than me, and I was drinking day and night, and I didn't see the harm I was doing to her. Like, she was sitting up waiting at me home, and she seen I wasn't eating properly, and I was losing weight, and it just come to the stage, she took it upon herself to sorted out. And it wasn't easy for an Irish mother 40 years ago with no Wi-Fi or no mobile phones or nothing. And to get some of the anti-psychiatric care quick, you had to involve the guards and the doctor. And she was able to do that, like, and done it. And that was the start of it, hey. And everything worked out after that. You know?
Did you push back? Did you sort of say, look, I'm not an alcoholic, or I'm not drinking too much, I'm just... Or did you recognise there was something amiss?
I knew what I was doing was wrong, like, when I was young, I thought I could keep doing it, but it wasn't until the pressure was put on me and I ended up in St. Connell's and Letterkenny that I realised, I'm not in here for nothing, I'm going to give us a go, I'm going to try and get sober, thank God I was smart enough to know that, and I, there was a lot of hard work getting it over the ground, but I got it done. Like,
and I suppose as a young man, often when I speak to people who, you know, have had problems with drink or addiction, you know, they can talk of difficulties in relationships and, you know, difficulties if they were parents or what have you. But I suppose as a 22-year-old, that's not really part of your story, is it?
No, I never had any difficulties, hey, with relationships or friendships or stuff, but I was very, very lucky. I would have a very outgoing personality. I wouldn't be shy or nothing. And that was a big help the first year I was sober, because, like, I know a lot of other men and women that try to fight alcohol problems, and trying to love life without drink and getting shy and timid and stuff was more difficult for them, you know. I seen that as a good luck charm. Like, I was very lucky that way, you know.
To some extent, though, was that ever exploited? In other words, egged on, you know, Big Jim, he's good crack. Come on, have another drink, Jim. That kind of a thing when you were drinking.
No, not really, no. Any excessive drinking by Jim Dunn, there was nobody pouring it down my throat. I always wanted more drink, like, I was always good crack, like, I drank heavy from I was 15 to I was 22, like, and never had any bother with the Gardaí or never got into trouble, or I was a happy drunk, like, I respect it when people, when the barman told me, you've enough, Jim, that's grand, that's, thank you, you know.
There was no harm in you as such?
No, hopefully not, no, hopefully not.
Yeah, well, if anyone's listening, I'm only joking. Working away too, though, like, you've always been a grafter, haven't you? You've always worked hard.
I've never worked for anybody else, only myself all my life, and I still work for myself. And listen, when you have an addiction problem, you always get the money, you know. It's part of the disease, you know. But I would like people listening to your podcast now to just the 40 years to me, it's a great success, and I'm very proud of it. Like, but, like, I want people to know that they can do that too. Like, you know, but you have to accept that there's a problem there, and you have to be able to say there's no harm in me saying, like, my name's Jim McLaughlin and I'm an alcoholic. I'm 62 years of age, and that's it. That's part of my life, and that's it. And I'm happy enough with it.
And when you went to St. Connell's, obviously there was different times there. There was different times, sorry, then than there are now. Did you go in there voluntarily, or were you put in there against your will? Were you going to be in St. Connell's one way or other? I know you said you kind of went in there willingly, so to speak. But was your mother going to put you in there one way or other?
Well, my mother wanted to get help for me, and 40 years ago, for somebody to get psychiatric help quickly, you had to get a doctor involved, and you had to get the Gardaí involved. And I was actually left up in St. Connell's by two Gardaí, two men that are still alive that I have utmost respect for. I'm not going to name them, but the two men done their job. They had to take me up, and they actually signed me in. It was a Thursday morning. 3 days later, I was told the fact that I was signed in by the Gardaí, I could get out again. I wasn't really in captivity or nothing, but I was told I was free to go.
Like, you weren't committed. You could have been, but
no,
you weren't.
No, yeah. But funny, the fact that I think I was lucky that I was signed in by the Gardaí, because that 3 days, whatever stuck my head, I was home then for one day, and I phoned a friend of mine who was leaving kids at school, the bus, and I said, I need you to leave me in Letterkenny. He says, what for? I said, I'm going to go back up myself and walk on and have a go at this. And that's what I did.
So you obviously knew there was a problem with your drinking, and the solution was there. And you saw enough of the place over the sort of weekend you were there, the Thursday through to the Monday, that there was a path out of this for you. Did you drink after that Thursday?
No, I didn't. I was only out one day. I actually thought about it, and I says, right, if I go back in here and get the help that's there, I'll definitely not drink. But if I say bye-bye to Letterkenny, I'm going to try this on my own, the chances are I would have drank, you know.
And when you went back in, did you sleep over, or was it sort of a day?
Oh, I stayed on for quite a few weeks. Hey. I was an inpatient for quite a long time. Hey, I'll tell you, that's a funny thing. Whenever I done the group thing, there's a thing called group therapy. I did it twice. And when it was my time to go home, to face the big bad world, I actually would have been happy enough if they had told me you're staying here forever. That was
What do you put that down to? Is it that you were free of the drink? You felt comfortable? Maybe you were at a time in your life where you weren't looking at to what could come next. Like, what do you put that down to, Jim? It's quite an interesting way to describe it.
I actually put that down to a bit of fear. Like, to overcome any addiction, should it be drink, gambling, drugs, any addiction, the big part for me was acceptance. So once you can say to yourself, listen, I have a problem here, That there to me is 90% of the cure. So when I was on Letterkenny in St. Connell's 40 years ago doing the group therapy, I made friends on there. There was people on there all their lives. There's people coming and going like me with mental health issues, or people with depression. It was big open wide. Like, and the sense of security and the sense of safety, the sense of, you know, I had a massive desire to do it. And looking back now, whether I did it right or wrong, I did it and it worked, you know.
It's really interesting how you describe that. What about the other, I presume it was all men, like were they all different ages? Like what was in that group that you felt almost like you found a home there, Jim?
They were all men like myself, men. Suffering from alcohol problems, men with long-term depression issues. Like 40 years ago, like a mental institution wasn't just like what it would be today. Like there was long-term patients on there that it was their home, and it was very. There was great solace in it. There was great, there was great help there. Like, and I was lucky. I got it.
And did you go through, I know you were in sort of group therapy as it was described, but was there a program that you went through specific to addiction or alcoholism, or what way was the treatment, if I could put it like that, in there?
There was. That group therapy is all about helping you overcome the beginning of sobriety. Like, but you don't actually realise that at the time, but you're actually going through it unknowns to yourself. Like, and I tell you, whatever I got out of it, I did it twice.
Yeah.
I said, I'm going to do this again.
So when you said you did it twice, are you including sort of the first time you went in with the guards, or was...
No, when I actually went in myself, I did the group therapy thing twice.
Right, I get you.
It learns you, the group therapy thing actually learns you about discipline.
Yeah.
And that discipline... If you become a disciplined person, you become afraid. And I'm a very disciplined person, and I'm very, very proud of being an alcoholic. And I can't say for certain, but I know I'll not drink again. But for people out there that needs help, just say to yourself, this is not going anywhere. Like, it's affecting a lot of families. Hey, there's relationships busted, there's children losing out on a parent, and but you see, a lot of people talk about, geez, look what that family's going through there, that man there's drinking, that woman there's drinking. But the addict's suffering too, like. That addict doesn't want that life. But addiction is a serious, serious illness. Like I said in one of your shows quite recently, that I class alcoholism worse than cancer. Because like that 40-year journey I had, it was quite easy, like it worked out all right, but there's no remission. You get remission with cancer and other diseases. Coping with alcoholism is a daily thing, and you do it the best you can.
So with that in mind then, is there a day that goes by that you don't not think about having a drink, but think about drink, or think about not drinking?
Well, that's where the discipline comes on, Ted. Hey, thank God, no, I had very few bad days now. And I'll tell you, hey, when I look back in the last 40 years, I had a lot of financial heartbreak, a lot of setbacks. I had family issues. I was sick. If I had went back in the drink, a lot of people would have said, Jesus, Big Jim's back in the beer. And they would have said, you couldn't blame him.
You'd have every excuse going to have a drink if you didn't have the discipline, if the truth be told.
If I didn't have a discipline and the pride to say I'm an alcoholic and the intelligence to know that I am one.
How did you... Do you then have, Jim, an addictive personality? In other words, would you have to have been careful with gambling or something else, or was it just the drink?
I would gamble not 10 years. I have an addictive personality, but I'd be careful. Like you don't end up Mr. Perfect either. Like
you're not a saint altogether.
Not at all. Listen, hey, I have five daughters, hey, that I love very much. I have four grandchildren. I have another grandchild due now in 3 weeks. And, like, I would never have had them five children if I hadn't got sober.
Yeah.
That is reality. That's a stark fact, but it's true. Like,
And you know, as I say, in previous conversations with people with an addiction, there's a rock bottom. Your story is a little bit different because you had a very powerful woman in your life, if you know what I mean. And it'd be interesting to know, if it wasn't for your mother's intervention, how long you would have gone down this road of boozing before you had that rock bottom, before, you know, there was...
Well, the rock bottom would have been a bad car accident or knocked down or you just can't be lucky. Your luck would run out, like, eventually. It's a massive problem at the moment, like alcoholism, and there's a serious amount of people don't know they are alcoholics, which is making it even harder.
Yeah, they believe they're. Yeah, but it's the same. There's people with lots of addictions, or there's people with anxiety or very, very stressed, and they don't realise, you know, they think that that's normal, that this is life, this is what you're supposed to do, this is how you're supposed to live your life, which is difficult, you know. There's a better life out there.
Well, you see, if a lot of functioning alcoholics, and they think, geez, I'm keeping up a job, I'm able to go to my work, and I'm eating okay, and I'm married with three wins, but there's a lot of family. It creates a lot of hurt and families. Like, the addict doesn't see for a long time. Like, the addict's actually totally oblivion to what's going on. And they lose out maybe in their family. And as you say, you mentioned the word there, rock bottom. And sadly, like, for a lot of addicts, rock bottom's the end. Like,
that's it. Come here, when you come out of... St. Connell's, there's probably more of a stigma of coming out of a mental hospital rather than sort of coming out having been an alcoholic or what have you. Was there a stigma to that? Was it like, oh, look, there he is, he was in the mental?
Well, the stigma, you know, the stigma is the way you handle that yourself. Like, the word mental, I think, is used very, very loosely. Back then, 40 years ago, if you did have a psychiatric problem or a drink problem, you're on the mental. Like, nobody said you're on a hospital ward, or you're on the maternity, or you're on pediatrics, or you're on... No. The word mental was used very loosely, but, you know, there is a lot of people with mental health issues, like, and they do need help, like, and there's a lot of our own county, like, we've had recent tragedies there too, like, and there's mental health issues, like, and it's a massive problem. Like,
we have there's obviously certain demographics whereby you see high instances of lives lost through suicide or whatever it might be. We talk an awful lot about young people, young men, a lot of the time. There's an awful lot of lads, I think, Jim, in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, 40s and 50s in particular. For lots of different reasons, whether it's addiction, relationship breakups, loneliness, whatever it might be. But my word, there seems to be an awful lot of men at that age that are dying, and dying before their time as well.
Oh, I totally agree with you. Like, but this is kind of a bit... I'd be a big phone person myself now. I love Facebook there, and I have a lot of friends there through the cattle business and phones. Like, but the mobile phone has created a savage amount of mental health issues. Like, the mobile phone has cut out human interaction, human speaking, talking, How's things? Like, you go into a cafe now. If I'd be driving about most days there, waiting and waiting, you go into a cafe for a deli. Maybe 10 other people on the cafe, but they're all texting one another. Like, the human race, we're human, we're bored to speak to one another, but that's creating mental health problems. Like.
See, back when you were 21, 22, 23, I'm kind of trying to tease it out how convincing someone with an addiction or alcoholism is. Like, would you have been very good at, you know, offsetting it, sort of saying, oh, there's nothing going on, explaining your way out of it, covering stuff? Like, were you quite deceptive? And I'm not saying intentionally deceptive as a bad person, but I mean, you know, knowing what you had to do to cover this, that, and then.
Well, I wouldn't just say it was deceptive, but I would say any addict knows what they're doing, especially when they overshoot. Like, they know it's wrong, but it's very hard to stop. Like, you enjoy that type of life, and it's nice, and it's plenty of social life, and alcohol was always in the mix, you know. But I'll go back to what I said to you 20 minutes ago. It's all about acceptance, you know.
Yeah.
Acceptance is a big, big factor, hey.
How soon after you'd packed in the booze, you were out of St. Connell's, were you loving life, enjoying life? And like everybody throughout our lives, and we might touch on this, you know, we have our ups and downs, we have our bouts of sadness, depression, whatever way you want to phrase it. But I mean, just post-boozing, post-St. Connell's, you know, back at home, back with your mum and your family, did you feel good?
I felt pretty good, but I felt tired. I was in there quite a while. I was mentally worn out, like, and I'll tell you, I used the word fear already in this interview. Like, that fear's on you, like, what's life going to be like without drinking? Will it be as good as it used to be, or? But they learn you a lot on there about discipline and respect and stuff like that there, and thank God, no, it added up, and I'm still here.
It's funny, you know, you mentioned cancer earlier on, and if I were interviewing you about cancer, long before now, we would have called cancer a disease or an illness, or put some sort of a frame on it, right? Yet we haven't really discussed that about alcoholism. We've still, I think, an awful long way to go before we don't always blame the individual. It's a little bit like obesity. You know, this is a disease you had effectively. This was an illness, and you had to go and get a cure.
Correct, but the thing you mentioned there about cancer, a disease, like, you go to the hospital, you might go to the hematology ward or the oncology ward or whatever. Like, but the problem with alcoholism and depression and them type of things, the word mental was always used. Like, there's no, you get to Letter County Hospital tomorrow morning and you want to go to greet a newborn baby, you go to maternity, or you want to go to see a sick child, you go to Peter Edricks. But there's no sign saying up there, ward 13 for people with drink problems, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Or mental health, for that matter, if you don't mind saying, Jim. You know, there's serious issues in that regard, yet they're so present in society. That's the funny thing, like.
Well, mental health's a big problem, hey. It's a massive problem. Then you have people like the go for help and they go on medication, then maybe they stop the medication, then maybe they mix the medication up with drink and stuff, and it ends up worse. You know, there is help, like, but you need to be careful. Like,
there's an awful lot going on in the world now, Jim. You know, compared to the 80s, I remember the 80s myself to some extent, but nowadays, you know, you've got people selling drugs on Snapchat and Facebook, and you've got young people being bombarded with ads to start gambling and all that kind of stuff. And of course, you still have the pull of the drink. In a way, do you consider yourself somewhat lucky that you became addicted to drink in the mid 80s rather than now and everything that's out there now?
I'll say, yeah, I'd have to agree with you there. Yeah, like, going back to what I said too, like, you're on there about people selling drugs and Snapchat and stuff like that there, but that's where the phone comes on to be the big problem. Like the phones are making everything very easy accessible and stuff like that there. Like,
I mean, obviously too, I think we have to have realistic conversations about life after addiction or life after whatever it might be. It's not always plain sailing. And I think you've talked and mentioned in the past that you have had your ups and downs mentally as much as anything else.
I had a few bad years with depression, hey, and got on the right medication and got over that. And then I had 3 years there with a serious prostate issue. I'm over it now as well. So there'd be no point in getting that cure or getting sobriety if you're told the next journey, the next part of the road is going to be easy. Like, you need to put a bit of work into it. You need somebody to love too. Like, I have a great love for my children and my grandchildren. And okay, this might sound stupid, like, but I'm going to say it anyway. But I have an unbelievable love of cattle. And I have found cattle very therapeutic to me all my life. Because I even remember when I was drinking, my father kept cattle. And I lay in the byre many night drunk. And I still keep a lot of cattle. And
is it the wheeling dealing? Is it the mart? Is it the buying and selling? Or is it literally being in the presence of them?
Be it both. The wheeling and dealing and the social side of that, and going to a market and meeting people and going for a cup of tea and a sandwich and buying one. And I would breed cattle. Like, I enjoy that interaction, waiting for a nice calf to come. And like, the vegans will not agree with that, like, but that's life.
I think too, sometimes your story's realistic, Jim, and I've said this on the radio before, and this is of no criticism to influencers or famous people, but often, you know, they have an addiction. They go through the very lowest ebb, they get treatment for that addiction, and next thing you know, they release a new album, they get back to playing sport, that everything is rosy in the garden. And that's great, and if that's that story, I'm not questioning it. But I often am reluctant to do those interviews because I don't feel they're real. I think sometimes that pathway's very difficult for your average normal person to achieve. In other words, you know, you will continue to have ups and downs. It's not always going to be easy. You are not necessarily going to be like that sports star or that singer that bounced back and now everything's perfect. You still have to keep going. You still have to fight. But the realities of life are still there, Jim.
Okay, you have to fight your corner and you have to try and get on with life. And like, no matter how long the road is, like, there's going to be potholes, so you go off the verge, or like, but you have to try and right straighten this out again. And like, there's a lot of sober alcoholics now that didn't do it in the first time out. Like, people relapsed and stuff, and that's okay too. Like, but like, I don't want to preach temperance to nobody. Like, I just want people to say, right, he done it, maybe I can do it.
Yeah.
You know. But don't lose touch with your family and your children and your... I think a lot of people... We mentioned the word rock bottom earlier on.
Yeah.
I think it's sad that a lot of people has to face that rock bottom head on before they realise, I should have done something about this earlier, you know.
Mm. How did you approach other people, friends or whoever it might be, and obviously not invading on anyone's privacy, Jim, but how did you, say for instance, you know there's someone around you or a friend or something or an acquaintance that you can recognize yourself in them. How, if you did you ever say anything, say, look, I was there, I can give you advice, I can give you some support, if you ever need any help, let me know. Do you know what I mean? How do you not...
I'll tell you the truth, I've helped a lot of people with drink problems, and I don't know if this is the right word, but I have a very high success rate,
yeah,
of helping people. And there's people, God bless them, that are gone. Like, but advice, you mentioned the word advice there. You can give somebody all the advice in the world, hey, but unless that person's willing to say to themselves, I need help, I'm going to take this on board. The advice is worthless. Because see, an addict, hey, whether it's gambling or drugs or drink, an addict, most addicts are very intelligent people. And most addicts will tell you what you want to hear. You know, tomorrow, we'll try it tomorrow or next week, or we'll go in Lent, or we'll wait to January, or, you know, sometimes tomorrow's the day to do it. But I said earlier on to you, you need to wear the badge. There should be no fear of saying, I'm an alcoholic.
Mm.
Should be pride in it. Like, I wouldn't be here today talking to you in this show now if I couldn't have said I was an alcoholic.
I know it sounds strange, but it's the word maybe that people struggle with and everything that goes with it. You know, like, say I had an alcohol addiction or something, I don't know. Is this word alcoholic? I wonder if the terminology puts a lot of people off embracing it because of all the, you know, I don't know.
There is, there's plenty of people out there that are diabetics. I'm a diabetic.
True. Yeah.
So
I'm actually almost in putting that to you. I'm actually falling into the very thing I was talking about earlier on. I'm stigmatizing it rather than normalizing that word, like you would say, diabetic.
People think alcoholics are people that lie along the road, down and out. They're homeless, whatever. 95% of alcoholics are living what they think a normal life, but. I know we said too, it is tough on families. It's tough on people say that family's going through a tough time. That man there, that woman there is very heavy in the drink and he's going to get killed and he's going to have an accident and it's not fair what he's doing. But you have to think about the addict too.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's talk to the addict if they're listening and they recognize a lot of themselves in this conversation. What is your advice, like, from the beginning? Because I know you talk about acceptance and stuff, or maybe that is the beginning. I'll leave it open to you. But you talked about the success that you've had, which is fantastic, Jim, in helping other people. You know, when they are still drinking and when you can see that they are ready, you know, maybe to make a change, what do you say to them? What is it that works?
You just have to try and tell them that there is a better life. There is another life, and the better life is there for you if you grasp it and have a go at it, and don't be afraid of failing. Like, I have a great, I keep quoting 72 hours a lot because I got enshrined in my head the fact that I was on days and some calls and then let out. But I tell anybody with an alcohol problem, you can't go off the drink for 40 years unless you do 72 hours first.
Mm.
You have to do 3 days to do 40 years. I hope people listening to your podcast now tonight, if there's even only one person that helps, it's a very worthwhile interview. That will help people.
You see, the thing too, there's a lot of help out there. There's a lot of brilliant people. There's people like you. There's loads of other people. There's organizations. You know, I mean, I know we can talk, and rightly so at times, about difficulties with the HSE and stuff. I get that, right? But if someone was listening to this and they want help today, or they want to take the first step, that can be done. There are people and organizations and institutions there for that reason.
Of course there is. But you see, as you said earlier on with the word stigma, there's a lot of parents that wouldn't be able to deal with having a child an alcoholic because they mightn't want my wee John's an alcoholic. I don't want to hear that. But if wee John's an alcoholic, he's an alcoholic, and get him help and get him sorted.
You would think 40 years without a drink would drag, but I presume, like the rest of us, it's flown. Time flies, doesn't it, with or without drink? The 40 years, I would say, it sounds a long time in this conversation, but my word, it goes quick, Jim.
Oh, it does. Hey, I remember I couldn't wait till I was 18, then 21, then 30, 40, 50, 60. I'll be 63 now, the 7th of June. But funny, Friday is the 16th of January, and I'll be off in 40 years on Friday. And that's my birthday.
Wow. Yes, the rebirth almost. Your rebirth day, is that what you mean?
I class that there more important than my maternal birthday or whatever. But that.
Right. Is that just a lazy man's way of saying you're only 40, Jim? No.
No, I feel 40, but sometimes
Yeah.
Ach, listen, hey, I had a good life, hey, I had a good life, but it wasn't easy sometimes. But
Well, you came through, you were in business during the Celtic Tiger and all that. I mean, unless you lived through it, it'd be very easy to forget how bad the time that
everything.
Was.
I lost everything in the Celtic Tiger. I lost a lot. Property, pub, restaurant, supermarket, petrol station. And
what happened there? Is it just the banks called debts in or what?
Banks called debts in, hey, and had revenue issues and had a lot of money lying out, hey, and, you know, it just became a deck of cards. It fell to pieces, hey, but, you know, I'm happy I was able to deal with it. Like, I didn't drink, I'm glad that them things, major traumas that did happen, didn't make me drink, but because it wouldn't be worth it.
But do you think too, though, in a way, Jim, in dealing with that, you had built up the skill sets, beating the drink to beat the next challenge, if you know what I mean? Like, do you think in a way that this was the next thing that you had to overcome, and maybe what you'd learned helped? I don't know. Maybe they were two completely different things.
I think life's no good unless you have challenges. Hey, I'd be a person there, like, the more pressure I'd be under, the better I can act, you know, the better I can handle things, you know. But it was a great experience, hey, and I hope I'll live another, I'll probably not live another 40 years, like, but...
Well, I've ruled nothing in or out. You get great comfort in your family. You've talked about your daughters, five daughters, unbelievable, and the grandchildren as well. And it's really interesting. You said you don't think that could ever have happened unless you gave up the drink. That's an awful gift to a lot of people that you've given them life and the opportunity to have children.
Oh, it's great, hey, because I don't want to make a big deal of it, but me, them girls, they're my five daughters, like me and their mother, part of company 13 or 14 years ago, like, and I end up in a single parent to them five girls, hey, and we had an unbelievable journey, hey. Like, there are plenty of tight corners, hey, but we could steer around them.
So, come here, are you a hobby farmer? Do you have a big herd or what?
I keep about 35 sucker cows, and you're
a sucker for punishment, aren't you?
Sucker for punishment. The more punishment, the better.
A suckler for punishment.
A suckler. That's a good pun there. A good pun.
Aye, but you enjoy the social side of it, being around the animals, going to the mart, wheeling, dealing, getting good price here, losing your shirt there. It's all part of the game.
I enjoy life. Thankfully, like as I said, I'm not perfect. I have more friends than I have enemies. And listen, hey, I wouldn't have had the 40 years sobriety without good friends. And I'm not going to name anybody, but they know who they are. And, you know, I'll tell you someone now, hey, my father died on the 16th April 2009. And he said to me that night, the night he died, he says, "You always remember this," and I says, "What?" He says, "You'll never have more friends than you'll have fingers."
Yes, that's true.
And that's 100%.
I won't keep you much longer. I'm just interested in your mum because she was so pivotal in what she did, and you've been surrounded by women your whole life, by the sounds of things, between the daughters and having a powerful mother and all of that. Did you ever sit down, or do you ever sit down and have a chat about, you know?
I do. Hey, me and my mother talks about it a lot. My mother, no later than Christmas here. I mean, I had my mother out for food twice over Christmas, like, and she said to me, no later than Christmas day, that one of the hardest things ever she'd done in her life was the day that she got the guards and the doctor to take me to Letterkenny, and she said she came up the next day, her and my dad, they visit me. And she says she didn't really know what way I was going to react. But she says, thankfully, it worked out. She was a serious woman, hey, a great Irish mother, still alive, 88, doing the best. And saved my life, you know.
Amazing stuff. And you know what? It's just amazing that she's been able to see you live your life, the life that she saved. Between the ups and the downs, as you say, we have our challenges. Everyone listening to this will have had their challenges. You've had your business challenges. We've all had those, our relationship challenges, health challenges. But all the while, you've been able to do it with clarity because you were able to give up the drink. Do you often think on finally sort of, Jim, you know, the people maybe around alcoholics that you know yourself, how their lives would be a misery, right? Dreading them coming home, dreading football matches because he's going to get loaded or she's going to get loaded and the aggro will start and the domestic violence that comes from that. I think too, you know, if you are living around someone like that, you always have to do as much as you can for them, but there comes a point you have to look after yourself too.
Of course, hey, and not all people that drink are alcoholics. It's a very small percentage.
Oh, aye, for sure.
But I enjoyed an interview with you, but don't, we're not going to make this interview about you and me. We'll make it about the people out there that are listening. Like, hopefully there's people out there listening to you and me now this last half hour that have said, do you know what, hey, I might give this a go. And do you know what I'll tell you? Give it a go and see if you fail on Friday. Give it a go again on Saturday and see if you fail next Tuesday. Give it a go again. And like, I don't mind. If anybody wants to ring me to talk more freely about my story, I'm not looking for feathers in my cap. I'm only looking to help people. That's it.
All right. Well, I suppose January 16th, 2026. Happy 40th birthday, Jim.
Thank you, Greg.
And thanks so much for chatting to us.
Not a bother. Good luck to you.
And a big thanks once again to Jim, and we wish him the very best of happiness and health to enjoy his wonderful family for many years ahead. And that was the first Greg Hughes podcast of a series you can enjoy over the weeks and months ahead. If you enjoyed it, don't forget to share it on your social media, tell your friends, and if you have a suggestion for the podcast or someone you believe we should be talking to, well, feel free to email carolineorr@highlandradio.com. But for me, Greg Hughes, and researcher and producer Caroline Orr, we'll talk to you real soon.